episode 14 of the Board Game Geek podcast, where we geek out about board games, the mechanisms behind them, and the people who create them. I'm your host, Candace Harris, and I'm super excited to be here today with Nikki Pontius from Game Night. I mean, you know her mostly from Game Night, but she also wears so many different hats in the board gaming industry. How's it going today, Nikki?
Pretty good. I'm really excited to talk to you about this list. I took it very seriously, and I have so many. And of course, as usual, it was really hard to get it under control.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So what's new with you?
Well, all kinds of wonderful stuff. I just got back from the Texas Pinball Festival this last weekend. That was awesome. March. Yeah, 24 to 26. I've never been to a convention for pinball before in my life. I've always played a little pinball and had fun with it, but kind of getting more into it. It's interesting. Pinball machines can be pretty deep on the rules. It's not just kicking a ball around. It's interesting, and I met a lot of pinball designers this weekend.
Wow.
And a lot of them play board games themselves. And what was really hilarious was some of them were kind of fans of Game Night, which I was like,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was going to this pinball thing to just be an attendee at a pinball con, and some of them recognized us, and it was like, what?
That's awesome.
Yeah, and they had so many new pinballs, and from what I've been told from the people I talked to, that it's kind of turning into like this great new rebirth of pinball, and usually there's just maybe one or two new ones a year, and this one had like eight new pinball machines, which is like a big deal for pinball. Cool. Yeah.
So, I've never even thought about like pinball designers, like that somebody is actually designing how those machines operate. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's super cool. And like I said, a lot of them are into board games. And if you really get into as a player, a pinball player, there are a lot of like, you got to do this and this first before you can do that. And if you finish all of this, you can go a level deeper. And there's this whole other rule thing going on. Wow. It's like, what?
Wow. That's crazy. So what was your favorite, pinball machine that you played?
I played so many old, super old ones, which was cool to see the super old ones. I didn't get all the brand new ones, but I got a lot of the brand new ones. I played, and if anybody's into pinball, they'll be like, oh my God. I got to play the new Pulp Fiction pinball game,
ooh,
which is really cool. And they tried to make the look of it very old school, but the actual play of it is a little more modern. Which is interesting to, I went to a bunch of seminars about like pinball today and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I played the new Foo Fighters, which was super fun. Oh yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. They have a lot of rock and roll IP. There was a new Queen, one that I managed to play. And, there's, what is The Godfather? I've never even seen The Godfather movies.
Nikki,
I know.
Oh my goodness.
They're on my list. They're on my list, but I still haven't gotten to them. So, and that one's crazy deep on the rules. I actually talked to the designer who is a BGG person and a board game designer, and he was telling me that he got a lot of his ideas for the gameplay of it from board games. So, I mean, it was just fascinating to be in this different world and find out it kind of overlaps.
That is really, really cool. Now I need to do a spinoff on cardboard creations, like pinball creations.
And, oh my gosh.
And start interviewing pinball designers. That's really cool. And it makes me think of Jeff Engelstein's, what is it, super skill pinball? That,
exactly.
That awesome pinball rolling right.
Yeah.
It's so... I thought that was such a, like, that's probably one of my favorite Roll and Write games. But we're not talking about Roll and Write games today.
No,
we are not. Today, we're talking about cooperative board games. And we're going to discuss some of our absolute favorite cooperative board games. And also, I want to mention a few that I've never played, but I've been kind of like wanting to try forever. But before we get into our favorite cooperative games, I'd love to hear what you've been playing lately, Nikki. So let's jump into Fresh Plays.
Cool. I have played, I'm going to say it wrong, and I even wrote it out phonetically for myself. Vela Nemo. Did it a bunch of, I played it two player, which is very different. I played it three and four player. It is a card shedding game.
Ooh.
It's new to the States, but from what I kind of understand, it's been in Europe for a little while. We have done a couple as game night live streams. We've played it that way, and we've played it for a game night. And awesome. It is just a really cool, it's a really cool mechanic, and the artwork is gorgeous.
Nice. That always helps.
Yeah. I have also played Garden Bow, which I don't know if you've gotten that one to the table yet.
I have not.
Okay, that was 25th Century Games. And that is a really fun, hey, guess what, tile laying game, which
nice.
I really enjoy tile laying games. And this one gets complicated because it is not just one layer of laying tiles, but it turns into three layers of laying tiles.
Oh.
So
you're stacking them, kind of?
You are stacking them.
Whoa.
So the first thing is you buy the seedlings. You get the seedlings and you essentially you're planting them, right, in the dirt. Then you get a plant, right? So here's this plant. But the seedlings have to match the plant tile that you put on top of it. And then eventually that plant's going to bloom. So then the plant needs to match the flower that you're going to put on top of it. So it's, you're like, okay, yeah, cool, whatever. I think I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
But geez, it was hard to get those combos when you have the whole vertical, right? So I really enjoyed that one.
And that was a lot. Garden Bow. So I recently played Ashes Reborn, Rise of the Phoenixborn. It is a card game that I think is mostly played with two players, but you can play two to four. It's designed by Isaac Vega, and it's from Plaid Hat Games. And I guess like Ashes originally released back in 2015, but I have the newer, like, Rise of the Phoenixborn set, which came out in 2021. And I don't know. I think in the past, like, 6 months or so, it's clicking to me how much I like card games like this. And so I heard from several people that Ashes was really cool. So I decided to pick it up and check it out. And when we were going on our trip to Asia last month, I was like, I'm going to bring some decks of this and learn it there, and ended up bringing four decks. We played like a partial game and I just loved it. And then I ended up like buying all these other decks. But the idea is you're playing as a Phoenixborn. It's kind of like a fantasy magic-y, not Magic the Gathering, but like magic, magic theme game. And you're trying to take down your opponent. You have a deck of cards, But you also will have a pool of 10 dice. So they have all these like different magic dice that you can use. And I guess like I'm not at a point yet where I'm building my own decks or anything like that. So I'm just going with whatever the recommended sets are. So like you might play a Phoenixborn that says, oh, you'll have five of these type of dice and five of these type of dice. And at the beginning of each round, both players or all players, you're going to roll all of those magic dice. And they have three different icons on them or three different symbols. And when you're playing cards, so you can either play like units that you can use to attack your opponents, units or Phoenixborn, or you can play spells out and you can like summon these other kind of creatures and stuff. But you're using the dice to kind of play the cards and like trigger all these effects. So you're kind of like spending the dice as you play. And it's a really neat game. Like the artwork on the cards are really cool. All of the Phoenixborns that I've seen so far, I've only played like 1.5 games. But so far I'm like really impressed with it. And it's definitely something I'm planning to kind of explore more. I already bought an Etsy insert for it. So like I'm getting everything organized and I have a friend locally who really likes it. So we're going to try to just get together every once in a while and play a few games. But yeah, the other thing that drew me into this game was the fact that and I think it just came out like, or it's coming out soon, but there's a new expansion for it called Red Reigns, where you can play it solo or cooperative. So I am excited about that because I'm like, it seems like I love these kind of card dueling games, but I also like the idea of being able to play cooperatively with people so that, you know, like not everybody wants to do that head-to-head battle kind of thing all the time, but I really like the different Phoenixborns and how the decks work and all the cards and everything. So that is Ashes Reborn, Rise of the Phoenixborn. Have you ever played that one before?
No, I have not. This is my first, I think I've heard the name, but that's it.
Cool. Well, yeah, you like that style of like card game, it is really cool. And I love the way that the dice are kind of a resource with your cards. I think that's really cool. And the art is just like phenomenal. And I know you appreciate art.
I absolutely do. I think it's a very key component to a game.
Yes, yes, indeed. So what else have you been playing lately, Nikki?
The funny thing is, the other one that I have on that was Lord of the Rings Adventure Book.
Ooh.
It is a co-op. So it has ended up in my honorable mentions list, so I don't know how into it I should get right at this moment, but I have played that recently all the way through.
Okay.
We can, all the scenarios.
Yeah, we can talk about it when you talk about your honorable mentions. That's totally cool. So another one that I've played recently is Hickory Dickory. I realized after at some point I was like, oh, these are both Plaid Hat games. But Hickory Dickory is a new 2023 release from Plaid Hat Games, and it's designed by Sawyer West, and it plays with 1 to 4 players. And in the game, we are controlling a team of mice competing in a royal scavenger hunt around a cuckoo clock. And man, the presentation of this game is really, really, really awesome. The game board is a big, beautiful cuckoo clock, and you're going to play 5 rounds, and you're basically keeping track of the rounds with the hour hand that rotates around the clock, and your goal is to score the most victory points. The way you score victory points in the game is primarily from picking up these different item tiles that you're trying to collect around the clock and delivering them at certain points throughout the game to get points. So around the cuckoo clock board, there are numbers 1 through 12, and each number has an action tile. So what happens is each round, there's a tick. So the minute hand is going to move to the next number. So, you know, it'll start on 1. And if there are any mice on the minute hand, they could potentially hop off and take an action, or there might be some mice that are actually on the action space. So each action space has like an inner space and an outer space. And if they're on the inner space, they could potentially hop on the minute hand and kind of like ride it around to take a different action. And so you start the game with three different mice, but you're able to get a fourth. And they each have special abilities, which is cool. But what happens is when you get to a space, you know, when this minute hand moves around, any of the mice, starting with the one who's furthest to the front, can hop off and take the action at the location. So at the beginning of the round, each action space is also seated with a random tile. So by being first and having dibs, you can kind of like jump off and get that tile if you want. So it's good to be at the front of the minute hand, but it's also a little bit risky, which I'll get into in a minute. Because if there are, so all the mice that are on the minute hand will get, you know, the opportunity to activate first, where they can like jump off and they'll move to the outer space of that action and take the action. And then after all the, or they can stay on the minute hand and like keep rolling around because maybe you want to take a different action. But then the mice that are already at that number and they're on the inner space, they can then decide if they want to either stay and hop back to the outer space and take the action, or they can hop on to the minute hand because maybe they want to roll around, you know, to a different action. So wow. It's like this like kind of like logistical efficiency puzzle of managing your mice and what actions you want to take and timing things out, timing things as you move around the cuckoo clock. But when a mouse hops onto the clock or onto the minute hand, if there's not enough space, they are going to bump whoever's up front off. And then the one that gets bumped off can take the action at the current space, or they can move one number backwards and take that action. But there's a lot of like kind of interesting, fun little tension of like, oh, I don't want to get bumped off because I'm trying to get to that delivery action and I want to be first, or I want to be first to get to such and such free tile. You know, it's really, really, really adorable. And there's also on the cuckoo clock, there's a chain beneath the clock where you have these other little mice markers that you're, one of the actions is just simply like moving up this chain. And when you get to the top of the chain, you'll get a certain amount of victory points. And also as you're moving up the chain, you're getting victory points. But the very first person to get to the top of the chain area gets 9 points. And then the handle of the chain slides up. And then the next person who gets to the top gets only 7 points. And it keeps going down until it's like stays at 4. And then every time you get to the top, you just get 4 points. So that's another way you can get victory points in the game. And then when your mice, when like multiples of your mice are at the same number, whether they're on the minute hand or on the action space, they can trade. Because I didn't mention your mice each have like a little board that says how many tiles they can hold. So there's like, there's one mouse that can only hold 2 tiles. Then there's one, this like big pappy who can hold like, I don't know, I think 5, which is the most. And then others can hold 4, I believe. Maybe there's one that holds 3. I don't exactly recall all of them. But you're able to trade so that you can set up one of your mice, hopefully, with a more optimal bag of goods to deliver. And when you deliver, you get points for each tile plus your largest set of items or matching symbols plus points for your largest set of matching colors, because each tile has a color and a symbol on it. And then there are these 2 quest cards that are out, and you might be able to fulfill a quest, meaning, oh, I delivered a purple button and a orange thread or something like that, and I get 5 extra points when I do the delivery. So there's that. Plus, throughout the game, you can get these favor cards, which are really cool because they can either kind of give you a special action, which you can use on your turn, like a little bonus action, or they also have pictures of the tiles, so you can actually kind of use it when you're going to do a delivery. And then the other thing about the delivery is that after you're done scoring everything you're delivering, everybody has these hunt boards, which are, think of Azul. We kept calling it, we were Azuling. But okay. You can, if you match, if any of the tiles you just scored match a space on your hunt board, you can add them there. And at the end of the game, if you have any completed rows and columns, it's extra points. So it's a really cool game. I love that it's like, it's so thematic, and the art and components are like, oh, it's just like, you're just going to be like, this is so adorable. The other thing I didn't mention is at the end of every round, you're going to roll a cat die. And then you have these two adorable cat paw tokens that are going to block two action spaces. Okay. So the next round, you won't be able to go anywhere where there's a cat paw because you're mice, right? You can't.
Yeah.
You're running away from the cat. So
cat friends.
So that is Hickory Dickory. Have you had a chance to play that yet?
I haven't. I've looked at the cover. I'm going to play it. I like that idea of the rondelle. While you were talking, I was trying to remember the other games that have had that kind of moving rondelle thing.
Right, right. Yeah, it's...
Was it Tikal or... I don't know. Oh, it's driving me crazy. I was trying
you're
to
gonna
remember
think of it
what
like
it was.
When we're in the middle of talk, or either in the middle of the night tonight, you're just going to wake up and be like, oh, that's what I was thinking of.
I think it was a Czech game originally. Why am I forgetting this? Whatever. I'm terrible at names. That's my,
you
my problem.
You play a lot of games, though, too. You guys have so many games. And have played a ton. So it's hard to remember. Yeah. But yeah, like that, the you trying to manage your different mice and also take advantage of their special abilities. There's one called a Scarier, or we kept calling him the Hoppy Boy. But like when he gets bumped off or jumps off of the minute hand, he can jump 0 to 2 spaces ahead. So it's like you're playing around with like, these are some of the things you're thinking about. Like, there's a lot of little interesting player interaction in this game, because if somebody has one of those and you're thinking like, oh, I'm on the front, but they activate their Scurrier and they jump ahead and get to something before you, you know, it's really cool. Anyways,
okay.
That is Hickory Dickory. be sure to check it out if you like cute mice and clock games.
Okay.
Well, shall we start talking about some co-op games?
Sure.
I was thinking, you know, I know you and I were talking about like doing this episode together, and we were kind of mulling over a lot of different things we could talk about. But I realized we haven't really on this podcast yet really talked about cooperative games. And I love cooperative games. I know not everybody does, but I think they're really great because they're helpful for getting more people into the hobby, because it's generally like not everybody, but it's fun to kind of collaborate and solve something together. And there are a lot of people who, when you say, hey, let's play a board game, they're completely turned off because they think they don't like any games because they don't want to like lose or do something that makes them look stupid in front of their friends. So like a co-op game kind of breaks that barrier and lets you work together, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I found too. If it's a co-op, because, you know, people are intimidated by learning game rules and like you just said, looking like they didn't do the right move and they're not smart, and it helps break the ice and let people know that it's okay. And we all have the same questions when we play games, and we're all just trying to figure it out, especially the first time.
Yeah.
And then they don't feel like they're being thrown in there alone. They've got a team with them.
Yep.
So
team.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
For me, like one of the first cooperative games that I played and had heard about, it was either Pandemic or it was Forbidden Island, which is Matt Leacock. And that's like beginner Pandemic. But I think like it was right around the same time that I discovered both of those games. And I remember Pandemic seemed really, really hard the first time I played it. And so did Forbidden Island, because I wasn't like playing many board games then. But like, you've been kind of in the hobby way longer than me. So, what were some of the key cooperative games that like came before pandemic, or like was pandemic like, I know pandemic is like the hit, you know?
I would say pandemic was the total game changer of it, but there were cooperative games beforehand. So I only put like two in. The mother of them all, of course, is Arkham Horror.
Oh, the Arkham Horror, the board game.
Arkham Horror, the board game. I was surprised to see that it was originally 1987. I am not.
Holy cow.
I am not joking. And it was originally Chaosium Inc. Then it was re-implemented in 2005 by Fantasy Flight.
Wow. But
still 2005. And that was actually like one of the first co-ops I ever played.
Oh, cool.
It's a huge, expansive board. It's a lot of, you do this and you get a card, or you get this item, or you get that. And in my mind, I feel like that was originally trying to take your D&D game and put it into a board game where you weren't creating the characters, you weren't rolling your dice to figure out if you carry a sword or a spear or whatever. Yeah. So I would say Arkham Horror is definitely, and of course, there are so many expansions for that, and it has been reprinted so many times. And there's so many different versions. There's the card game, the dice game, the this, the that, and all these other spin-offs that kind of started the idea of taking a D&D game and putting it on a player board.
Yeah. Wow. I did not realize that, you know, there was something. Well, first of all, I've never played Arkham Horror, the board game.
Okay.
But I did not realize, I haven't played Eldritch Horror either. But I didn't realize that it kind of came from something that came out back in 1987. Wow.
87. So 87. I've never played that version. I have played the Fantasy Flight, of course.
Yeah.
In 2005. But yeah.
Yeah. And that makes total sense that it would be coming from the perspective of, you know, trying to take D&D and RPGs and like turn it into a board gaming experience.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's my take on it anyway.
Top take from Nikki here.
Maybe it's been said before. So I would say, so that was my starting point. And then the next cooperative game that really turned it into a family style game, because Arkham Horror is like 1 to 6 players and you sit down and you play it for hours. Sure. But the next one that turned it into like, let's just play like 4 or 5 players. Let's have tiles and kind of a game board, and let's like narrow down the time to, you know, 40 minutes or something like that. And that would be Lord of the Rings, which was 2000, and it's Reiner Knizia.
Oh, yeah. I think I might own that version because at some point I was trying to buy like almost every Lord of the Rings game, but I've never played that cooperative version.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really hard.
Awesome.
It's a little bit easier now that we're in a culture of cooperative games, and there's kind of a way you play cooperative games where you might actually have a chance of winning. But at the time when it was all kind of brand new, it was really, really hard to win that game. It's still not easy. And I have played it just the straight up game, but I've also played it with a couple of the expansions, and that's, you know, all based on the Lord of the Rings world. But the whole idea of the game is to take the ring to Mordor, and you're all working together. One of you is Frodo, of course, and you have a special power, and it's a little card with a special power. And then there's all the other characters in the game, and you have hands of cards that you can play to move or fight or bring. There's a Sauron track at the top of the board, and it's this cute little tower, and it starts at the middle, and then evil gets worse or evil Uh-oh. Gets better. And so you're trying to keep that kind of before it like falls off, and you're trying to help Frodo get it to it and throw the ring into the volcano. And there's two double-sided boards. So you start out in one land and you finish that land and you turn the board over and you play the next land. And it's a lot of fun. You get some special powers, but it's not, I mean, it's a compact little game that you can play just one side of it and be done.
Okay.
So to me, that's like, and that was Hasbro and Fantasy Flight.
What year did that drop?
2000.
Okay. So 2000. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was Reiner Knizia. Of course, you know, he gets things like tight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's all math. So, and there's dice in the game, and those dice give you different effects. And then you can share cards with each other. Like, you need more of this to make a set to make something happen. And it's a lot of fun. And I would say that's the first of the let's make this a 45-minute game and four players, the family size game.
Cool. So, you know, and I guess then maybe pandemic eventually.
And then pandemic, yes.
Which kind of blew things up.
Yeah, exactly.
Put cooperative games on more people's radars.
Yeah, because that also gets it down to a reasonable player count, a reasonable game time. And the other types of games still exist with that there's more of a story and you play with 50 million people and there's tons of cards. And, you know, you play like the whole afternoon, and those immersive stories are really cool. But if you want to play a cooperative, you know, in a normal amount of time, especially with people that are like not into board games.
Yeah. Keep right. it shorter, right?
Right.
Cool. Well, do you want to jump into your honorable mentions?
Well, okay, since we're talking about Lord of the Rings, let's go on to a very, very recent Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Rings Adventure Book.
Oh, this is your fresh play.
This is my fresh play. It's brand new. It's a Ravensburger game, and it's in the realm of these storybook games they've been doing. I think the first one was a Princess Bride one.
Okay.
And it's a fat cardboard book with, you know, five or six game boards and game setups. So each flip of the book is you're starting a new adventure. Oh. And it gives you the setup rules. And there are tokens that you play in one scenario, but not in another scenario. And there are different achievements that you're trying to get from board to board. So it kind of turns into this like a puzzle game.
Cool.
And you're all playing together again to get through the Lord of the Rings universe and get the ring back to the volcano. And your adventures get harder and more difficult. And there's all kinds of tokens with orcs on them and Sauron, and you've got to do this and this in order to get Gandalf over here. And of course, it's all a big discussion and all of that kind of stuff. The new thing I'm starting to see in a lot of these cooperatives is like, if it is that player's turn, they have ultimate say.
Yes. Yeah.
And I like that. And I like to try to adhere to that, because sometimes you can get into the
quarterbacking.
These games, the yep. quarterbacking, which yep. we've all heard about before. So if everybody's honest about it, that's no fun for anybody. And I like these games that are trying to figure out how to get that quarterbacking under control.
Totally. And I'll actually jump in with, because you brought that up, I'll jump in with one of my honorable mentions. And that is Race to the Raft, which is a new game coming from Frank West, the designer of the Isle of Cats. And it's this cooperative kind of path building, tile placement, social puzzle board game. But when it's your turn to, I think it's when you have to lay these, you're trying to make a path for these cats to escape this fire. And you have to keep adding these polyomino fire tiles. And but when it's your turn to place those, nobody can give you any input. Like, you have to do it.
Great.
And it's amazing because your teammates will sometimes be there, or you will be if you're in this position watching someone try to figure out how they're going to place this fire polyomino or Tetris piece. You can't say anything. You'll just be like cringing, like, oh, like, why aren't they doing it this way? Why aren't they doing it that way? But it's great because, yeah, it gives that person the opportunity to like think through the decision how they want to play something without interruption. So anyway, I'll let you jump back to your honorable mention, but I wanted to just
throw that totally one out there. Cool. Yeah. Does that guy always just do cats?
I think he does have quite a few games in this set in this universe. Okay.
All right. I like the Isle of Cats game.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I have Legends of Andor, which is almost like a dungeon crawl kind of game. And you can buy different scenarios. I think the first one had four or five scenarios in it. And you play, it's a dungeon crawl. You play as a group trying to run through the dungeon and get stuff and help each other out. And I enjoy it a lot. And it's one of those games where it's more on the fantasy side than like an Arkham Horror. So if you're not into that Arkham Horror universe.
Yeah, thematically.
Yeah.
But what more just standard, like, fantasy.
Yeah.
Not like standard horror kind
of
thing.
We are a troop of adventurers.
Yeah. Yeah. That is one that I still haven't played, but early on when I got into modern board games, I always, like, I feel like it might still be in my Amazon wish list somewhere, but like I was always almost going to buy that game. And I'd still like love to try it at some point.
It's so fun. It's not heavy, but it does have a story element to it. It's cool. I like that one. I would like to play more of the adventures on that.
You have any more honorable mentions?
The other one I'm going to say is Fortune and Glory. That is definitely 2011.
I don't think I've heard of that game.
It was 2011. It's Jason C. Hill. It's Flying Frog Productions. And it's another one where if you're not into Arkham Horror, but you want to play a game like Arkham Horror, that one is really, it's more of like your Indiana Jones universe.
Oh.
Fortune and Glory, right? Tons of cards, huge board. It plays 1-8 people. You're collecting adventures and getting artifacts and getting, you know, the gun and the knife and the blah, blah, blah. So if you're like, I don't want Arkham Horror, then I would absolutely recommend Fortune and Glory. It's got the same feel, just a different theme to it.
Cool.
So I thought that was an important one to bring up.
Yeah, I've never heard of it, so I appreciate you bringing
it. Oh, yeah, and there's a bunch of different boards, and they had some expansions and stuff, I think as recently as 2014, I think. I did not write down what the expansions were, but yeah.
It's all good.
And then I wrote Horrified. I like that one. There's two versions of it. There's like the classic monsters, like your Dracula and Frankenstein and that. And then there's like the American Legends one. And they're fun. I like playing them for Halloween. They're not deep. You're running around the board fighting monsters and you're trying to help each other out. So that one's really cool. And the last one I really want to talk about is The Grizzled.
Yes.
This has a cool implementation of like, you don't talk.
Yeah.
And that comes from the first game I saw where it was like, you don't talk, was The Mind.
Mm.
So it's got a very The Mind feel to it, but there's chips and stuff like that. So I guess for people that can argue that the mind is an activity and not really a game,
right?
The Grizzle brings it more into like the game realm. And it's a kind of a sad subject matter. It's World War One, and you're trying to, you go out on these missions, and if you've had too much, you can leave the mission, and then your friends try to help you out with these tokens that give you support. The artwork's awesome. It's a really neat game that you play quite silently. So you're trying to understand what the other people may have in their hand and how to help them out on the battlefield. And I found that game very interesting.
Yeah. No, I like it. At some point, they came out with like a new version of it with kind of like minis or something. And I picked it up and I haven't tried it yet. But this was a game, The Grizzled, when I played it the first time, I was like, oh, I need to buy this. And I got the expansion and everything. But that kind of reminded me of one that I didn't have on my honorable mentions, which I just threw on, is Magic Maze.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Magic Maze is a game where you don't talk and you're trying to like move these little figures around, but everybody's moving them simultaneously. Like you each have your own direction you can push pieces in, and it is just so exciting and fun and silly. That's like one of those games that I will probably always keep in my collection. Yeah, so I just thought about that. But I'll just kind of zip through a few honorable mentions myself here. So one of them is Dead of Winter, which is a zombies survival game where you could potentially have hidden traitors, which adds a little spice to it because it's like, oh, yeah, we're all working together. But maybe somebody's not. Maybe somebody's secretly right. working against us. Or, like, you might all be working together, so you don't know whether there is a traitor or there may not be a traitor. Mm-hmm. But it just has this little, like, you're always suspicious that there could be someone, so you're questioning what other people are doing. And that is just, we play it with our friends, Cassie and Jake, and every Christmas Eve for, like, the past 4 years or so, it's become, like, a tradition for us to play Dead of Winter on Christmas Eve.
All right.
I also added The Mind. You know, we kind of just talk about it. Got a shout out to Eric Martin's favorite game. but yeah, you don't talk and you're playing cards in ascending order, or you're trying to at least without talking. Right. From Wolfgang Warsh. It's just such a great game. We just introduced it to friends who are kind of, you know, don't play a whole lot of games. And yeah, it's just a fascinating little activity. Or I think
did they find it frustrating, the whole like just trying to read each other's faces?
No, you know, it took a couple of rounds to get going, but we were eventually able to get to level 6, and then we were like, all right, let's go to bed, because level 6 wasn't really wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who's not familiar with The Mind, you start with level 1, so each player has one card, and the deck of cards ranges from 1 to 100, and there's one of each card. So as you progress through the game, each round you'll add another card, so then we'll have 2 cards each. And you're trying to kind of simultaneously play your cards without talking to each other, but you have to play them in ascending order or you lose life and then eventually die. But it's just kind of a magical game when you are able to get that rhythm down and play cards. And it's small. It's in a small box. You can take it anywhere. Another honorable mention is Just One. Just One is a cooperative party game where you're trying to get one of your teammates to guess one word, and everybody else has to write one word to help that person guess the one word that's on their card. But the problem is, if you write the same thing as anybody else who's writing a word, the person who's guessing is not going to get to see those. So it's just every time I've brought it out for people, it's a hit. It also travels well, great for camping. It's like one that you should probably just keep in your car, in the trunk of your car, because you never you never know that and the mind when you'll need to just break them out and have some entertainment. I have two more. One is Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion. I really liked it. I've never actually played the big Gloomhaven, but we started Jaws of the Lion, really dug it, just haven't finished it yet, so I don't know, you know, where it'll fall, like when I actually eventually get through it. And then similarly, thinking of starting things and not finishing them, Pandemic Legacy Season 0 and Season 1. We started Season 1 with friends who had a baby and moved out of town and ended up moving out of town, so we didn't finish. And then Season 0, we started and just haven't finished because we're also playing like Forgotten Waters with the same group and we just don't get together often enough.
Okay.
So anyway, I really enjoy what I've seen of both of those pandemics, but I just need to finish them.
You do?
Yeah.
I won't say anything. I like them. They are fun.
I mean, like I said, so far they're really, really awesome. But what is the, I'm not going to say your number five. I'm just going to say the fifth game on your list.
Okay.
Or the first one you want to talk about.
No way I could rank these. There's so many, and that's why the honorable mention list is like huge. And you said something a second ago, and I'm like, oh my gosh,
something else.
I didn't mention that one, and it's just
the way it goes.
Yeah, we could be here forever. all right, so this one is a tough one. I enjoy it. I feel bad that I enjoy it. It is called This War of Mine.
It was almost on my list. But yeah. Okay, go ahead. I'll let you talk.
Yeah. It is a very rough subject matter.
Yeah.
It is about war. It is about surviving, not being a military person, but just being a person that is stuck in a war situation. The whole time I was playing it, I was enjoying it, but I was feeling bad.
Yeah.
Because it's really, it's a rough subject matter. But the choices you have to make, the way the gameplay is, I will just get into the gameplay. The board is a house that you have managed to kind of secure for yourself. It's dilapidated. There are three levels to the house. You are searching them for food, weapons, clothes, whatever to survive. The game board, each level is a, there's decks of cards in each of the rooms, and this is how you get things and find things. I liked the idea that it was a house that you were searching and you couldn't just hop to this place or that place. You had to go take the stairs to get to these other rooms. You had to clean up rooms to get to other rooms. The way that played was very interesting to me. And then around the board is a whole bunch of other cards and tokens and, you know, being hurt and this and that, and events happen that you have to come together as a group to solve and get through, really, is the whole point of the game. That was 2017. That was Awakened Realms, and it's 1 to 6 players. Michael Orsworks.
Someone designed it.
Michael and Jacob. I'll just...
Okay. Michael and Jacob.
It's a really good game. It's
so
a tough
thematic
subject matter, but it's really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I completely agree. And any game that can kind of pull those emotions out of you and like really suck you in is really cool. I always like when I started, when I originally played This War of Mine, I felt it reminded me of Dead of Winter, but without the zombies. Cause it's like, you're surviving. This war is going on outside and you're just trying to survive with your crew. But it's really well done. And it's based on a video game too.
Right. Which I never played the video game. We did play this one on game night. And I think Aaron was the only one in the group that had played the video game. None of us were coming from that direction.
Okay, well, my number five, or the first game I'll mention, is The Crew. The Crew, and I would say specifically Mission Deep Sea, but The Crew, Quest for Planet Nine came out in 2019, and then the Mission Deep Sea version, which I prefer, came out in 2021, but they're both awesome. The Crew is a cooperative trick-taking game that's designed by Thomas Singh, and it's from Cosmos, and it plays with 2 to 5 players, and the whole thing, you know, it's super cool that it's a cooperative trick-taking game,
but yeah.
Also you have limited communication with other players, which is really, really interesting. You play through a series of missions, which are like hands of tricks where you're trying to accomplish something by playing cards as like a trick-taking game. And you can't discuss what's in your hand with other players, but everybody gets a communication token. And in between hands, or in between, I guess, is it full hands or just tricks? I guess in between tricks, you can use your communication token and basically play one of the cards from your hand in front of you. If you put the token on the top of the card, towards the top of the card, you're signaling to players that, hey, like, let's say I put an 8 blue down. If I put it towards the top, I'm telling my my teammates that this is my highest blue card. If I put the token at the bottom of the card, I'm saying, hey, this is my lowest blue card. And if I put the token in the middle of the card, I'm saying, hey, this is my only blue card. And you still get to like play that card as if it's in your hand, but you're giving your team some data that will hopefully help you complete your mission. And so you have like a logbook of all these different missions that get progressively more challenging. And each one has its own flavor and like a unique win condition. And you could either play through them consecutively as a story, or you can play any mission kind of just standalone. And there's this like deck of task cards that you have. Like tasks will be like, I will win the blue 4 card, or I will win exactly 1 pink card, or I will win only the first trick. You know, different things like that, but there are 96 of them. And at the start of the round, they're going to get distributed to the players, but you can't talk about it with other people. So whoever's the captain, you'll have the like the 4 submarine card in your hand, so you'll be the captain for the round. You have to decide first which of the task cards you're going to try to take, but you can't talk to other people about it. So maybe I'm the captain and I'm like, oh, like, should I take this task? And meanwhile, Nikki's like, I could crush that task, but she can't tell me that. So I had to decide if I'm going to pass or take a task. So that's really cool. But this game is just really great. I love trick-taking games and I find it to be like really fun, challenging, and unique. And it just kind of like makes you think really differently, because it's not just about like, oh, I just want to win every trick or hit my bid. They're just like all these different challenges that kind of stem from the limited communication with your team. And it works your brain in an interesting way as you're trying to, you know, everybody's trying to complete these tasks, especially when it starts getting more complicated. So that's The Crew.
I've played that one. I think I've only gone like 1, 2, 3 and everyone's like, cool, we're done. And then I introduced it to a new group of people. So I had to play 1, 2, 3 again. So I've never gotten that high on that one, but yeah, I enjoy that one too.
Cool. What is your next game?
Okay. So let's get a little lighter. Marvel United.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's fun. It's simple. There's a ton of bad guys that you can choose to fight for the game. Just you choose one and they come with their own set of rules and their own sort of, the gameplay is generally the same, but the way you clear up their henchmen or get that object or whatever is different from bad guy to bad guy. It's silly, but I like the idea that you're playing it in a ring of cards. And what made that kind of interesting in that regard was when you play a card, there's these special abilities on the card. There's like a punch, a zappy kind of thing, or a movement kind of thing. And then there's a wild, and sometimes there's two of them on the card, or one of them on the card, or a mix of two of them. But not only do you play the one card that you put down, you play the card previous. So the previous player put down a card, and the discussion comes in when that player's playing their card. Well, what do you think you need to be able to do this and that on your turn? So they're not just thinking about putting down a card for themselves that's going to benefit them alone on their turn, but how it's going to benefit the next player.
Gotcha. Interesting.
So yeah, it's interesting, and it's when did that come out? 2020, actually. And that was CMON, and it's 1 to 4 players. So it's another one of those where it's not this epic game that lasts forever and there's 60 million players. and I think it's simple enough to where a kid could have a lot of fun playing their favorite Marvel hero, with a little help from mom and dad. But the game comes with like 5 or 6 heroes that you choose from, and then that's your deck of cards. So I can be Iron Man or Black Widow or the Hulk and things like that.
Cool.
And the chibis that come with the game are these little cute chibis of the bad guys and the good guys. And it's just,
what on earth is a chibi?
Okay, it's the little miniatures that have the exaggerated features.
Oh,
so it'll
gotcha.
Be like kind of short with the big round head.
Gotcha.
You know,
okay.
So they're not realistic like a Warhammer figure would be, right? With
gotcha.
All their guns
it's more
hanging
cartoony
out.
Kind of.
It's
fun.
More cartoony, so that a lot of people they just call them chibis when they're in that style.
Ah, learn something new every day.
There you go. So I have fun with that one. It's just a quick, fun thing to play. That's Marvel United.
So I have actually heard, I hear a lot of people love this game. And I think the only reason I probably haven't tried it yet is because I'm not a big Marvel person. So like, I'm never drawn to Marvel games, but like some of, as you described, like the gameplay, it sounds like something, I don't hate Marvel. I'm just not excited by that, and the movies, I'm like, I'll go. And
yeah,
they're cool, like they're good movies, but it's just not like my jam. So right. I haven't tried it yet, but like you know, the way you described some of the gameplay, it sounds fun, and it sounds like something I want to try.
Yeah.
And I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Yeah, it's fun. That's one thing I'd like to say though, to add to your, like, you're not into Marvel, this whole licensing thing, although I love it and I'm into Marvel myself, can be off-putting for some people because they're not into Marvel or they're not into DC or whatever, so they kind of walk away, dismiss the game.
Yeah,
but it is fun.
Yeah.
But that's all goes down to theme and everything else. If you're not into fantasy, then that game might be less appealing to you.
Right, and I'll say just don't knock it till you try it, because there is a game on my list that I'll talk about in a bit that the theme did not appeal to me, and now it's, you know, it's one of my favorite cooperative games. So
okay,
yeah, so I will definitely give that a whirl, or I'll wait till they make a like Lord of the Rings United or something.
There you go.
So my next game that I'll mention, I have actually mentioned on this podcast before for a different episode, and it is Legendary Encounters, an alien deck building game, which I mentioned on the deck building episode with Corey Thompson.
Woohoo!
But it came out in 2014. It's designed by Ben Chikosky and Daniel Mandel, and it's from Upper Deck Entertainment, and it plays with 1 to 5 players. And it's a fully cooperative deck building game based on the Alien movies, which, again, this wasn't the game I was just referring to or thinking of when I told you I didn't love the theme.
Okay.
But I love the game. Yeah, I for a while would hear people talk about that this was a great deck building game. And I'm just like, I'm not into like Alien, you know. So I avoided it.
What is wrong with you?
At some point, I came to my senses and I ended up, I think it was like I watched this solo playthrough in like One Stop Co-op Shop or something. And I was just like, man, this game looks fun. And I got it. And it just, here it is, like on two of my lists for deck building and cooperative games. It just has such a kind of cool progression. You're trying to like survive against this onslaught of aliens. And you're working your way, you're working together. Like, I don't know offhand how many deck building cooperative games there are, but I love that you can kind of assist other players and the game just feels very thematic. You know, whether you're a fan of Alien, the Alien IP or not, like it just is a cool thematic experience as you're like recruiting these different members of your team, but you're also trying to find these aliens and clap them or kill them. And, but you don't know what they are at first because they slide in face down. And so there's like this suspenseful element to it. So yeah, so for me, I just love deck building games. And I think the theme is like really well integrated. And I think also the other thing, talking about the integration of the theme, like the art is really cool. The art style is cool. And it comes with this play mat. So just the look and feel of a game that's mostly a card game is actually like just really cool and attractive to me. So yeah, I really enjoy this game and I want to play more of it. I think I have most of the expansions at this point. So that is Legendary Encounters, an alien deck building game.
Have you played any of the other Legendaries?
I have not, actually.
Oh, okay.
I want to get the Matrix one when it comes out. I think it's coming out this year, later this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I played the Alien one, and I played the Marvel one, and they're both really cool. I'm very partial to Aliens, though, so that one was, like, the ultimate.
Cool.
But, yeah.
But it didn't make your list, I guess.
Ooh, I forgot about it.
Look, it happens. It happens. I know. There's so many. It's hard to kind of.
Yeah.
But we know it would have been. It would have made Nikki's list too.
Totally.
So what's the next game on your list?
So I put Ghost Stories down. I feel like people don't talk about that one that much, and it's really good. And it came out in 2008, the same year as Pandemic, and it is. Hard. It is very hard. And there's been several expansions that I haven't played any of the expansions. The thing that's cool about this one is that you are the game board is tiles. So the game board is going to be different every time you play it. And you're in a little town and it's getting haunted by ghosts. I'm not big into the all the kung fu, like, but this is like some bad guy that's a big deal in all of those kung fu movies.
And he's haunting you?
And he is trying to come back. So what he's trying to do is get his little ghost minions to find his ashes that are buried in this little town that everyone has forgotten about, so that he can come back to life and take over everything. So you're playing monks fighting this guy and his bad guys. And there are some action cards that come out. And it locks down the board and it starts getting more and more teeny and you can only do things in the vertical and the horizontal. And then it's just, you get some tokens that you can use for some special abilities. But I wanted to mention that one because it came out the same year as Pandemic. And again, it is an example of turning these epic things into a 1-4 play. It's 1-4 player game that
shorter
can play
time frame. Yeah.
In a shorter time play. That isn't this big epic thing.
So I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been like smiling at you hard ever since you brought it up, because so on my list that I wanted to bring up towards the end of co-op games I really want to play that I've okay. kind of been wanting to play, Ghost Stories is one of them. And, all right. And this is actually the game that made me want to make the list of like, huh, what are a few games that like I've been wanting to play forever, because mm-hmm. I've heard it's like really good and also that it's really hard, and I love the look of it. So I mm-hmm. actually just yesterday tracked down a copy and got a copy, and someone has it with the expansion. I think it's called like the first expansion was like the White Moon expansion.
Yeah, but that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so I've always heard good things about Ghost Stories, and definitely you hear people say it's impossible. But I didn't even realize that it was the same year as Pandemic, and that may be why it kind of got lost in the shuffle. If, yeah. You know, Pandemic just would like boomed in popularity, but sure. I'm really glad you brought it up, and it gave me an opportunity to kind of.
I will play it with you the next time yeah. we have a chance. Yes. I will play that with you.
Awesome.
It's been a few years for me, so.
I know, and yeah. I keep talking to Lincoln about like we want to have you guys down here and have Matt smoke some meats and hang and right. stuff. So, you know, maybe that's on the docket for when we get together for our game night eventually.
Sure. Matt'll it's a co-op, so Matt'll
exactly.
will be okay.
Exactly. I think he'll be into it. And I know they have Last Bastion, which they released a couple years back, which kind of re-implemented it with a more of a fantasy theme. Mm-hmm. But I kind of debated, but I really like that theme of the like that you're playing these Taoist monks and you're in a, yeah. like, a village in Asia with these ghosts. Like, I think that theme is just more interesting and unique than just the mm-hmm. The Last Bastion having more of just a fantasy theme.
Yeah, yeah.
But whatever theme you prefer, yeah. like. Yeah, and plus, I think Ghost Stories is out of print at this point.
Really? Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, you can still find copies secondhand, like I did a couple days ago. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And but otherwise, I think they're you know, they have The Last Bastion, which is the newer mm-hmm. kind of version of it. And if you don't care about the theme, you can probably just pick that one up if you're okay. interested. But
yeah, that was a repost game originally too. So yeah,
it still is,
which is same as the just. One you were mentioning.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Good call. Yeah. Good call. Good call. So the next game on my list, and that was Ghost Stories, by the way.
Yes.
The next game on my list is another game I've talked about on the podcast before. It is Too Many Bones. Mm. Too Many Bones is a chip theory game designed by Josh and Adam Carlson. And it came out in 2017, plays with 1 to 4 players. So you can play solo, or most cooperative games you can play solo. But it's an adventure game where you're playing as a Gearlock, which is these are the different characters in this game. And it's kind of an RPG style game where you're leveling up your character, but you're doing it with these different skill dice. And each Gearlock, I forget how many different types of Gearlocks exist nowadays, but they each have their own flavor to them and different like skill dice related to whatever they specialize in. And you can kind of like, even if you play the same Gearlock every time, you can kind of like build your skills in different ways to kind of give that Gearlock its own feel. And with all chip theory games, the core component is like these nice poker chips that you'll be playing with. And so for me, what drew me in was like how not only like the different gear locks and their like play styles and the way you can like level them up as you kind of go through these different encounters and everything, but like I love the tactile experience of playing this game and moving stacks of chips around, because your health is red chips that are stacked underneath your gear lock, and it just feels like really puzzly. It is a bit more complex and like a little it's difficult to learn, because especially the rule book isn't the greatest, but like later versions, they've redone, they've made some revisions to make it a little easier. But there are also a ton of videos at this point on how to play Too Many Bones. And once one player knows, like, it's cooperative, so you can kind of make it an easy experience for other players to get into if one player, like, knows the game well. But, yeah, I just find it, like, really fun. And honestly, like, when I was playing, because I played Too Many Bones before I played Gloomhaven, when I was playing Jaws of the Lion, especially the initial few scenarios, I was just like, huh, like, I like this a lot. I like this hand management, the card play system. But I was like, I kind of would rather just play Too Many Bones, you know?
Okay.
So there's just something that is, like, really, really awesome about this game. I like playing it solo, and then I like it even more with, like, two players. Three players, I would say it tops out at, and that's part of the reason it's not, I'm mentioning it now, even though I love this game so much, but I would not play it with four players, really. I mean,
okay,
you can twist my arm. I would do it, but, like, I avoid four players. I think two solo and maybe three are kind of, like, the sweet spot. But yeah, it's just, it's a fantastic game, and I love the battle system where you're moving your stacks in these grids, and different gear locks move differently, and these baddies that you're seeding on the board, and just the puzzle of, like, how are we going to deal with that? Like, where should I move so that I'm not taking much damage if this baddie kind of activates? And, you know, it's just, like, right, a really cool puzzle. So that is Too Many Bones. Have you played it, Nikki?
I don't think I have. I know the name, and I think that was when I wanted to play, but yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. I think you would like it.
Okay.
So what's your next game?
My next game is Black Orchestra.
Nice. Nice.
Okay.
Okay.
So ahead. That was 2016, and that was Game Salute, and it's 1 to 5 players. It's a kind of a historical, you're plotting to get Hitler out of and end World War II. So the game comes with a ton of plot cards, and you get, like, 3 of them, and then you kind of choose one to ultimately work on. So the team itself is trying to collect what is needed to collect what you need to, and then catch up to wherever Hitler is, because he's moving around the board, and execute this plot. The active player is the one that will actually try to complete the plot card. But while you're running around, there's you can end up in the Gestapo. You are possibly getting suspicion on you, which makes you a little easier to be thrown. If your friends have to come out and get you out of the Gestapo, that throws suspicion on them, because why are they getting this person that's, you know. But it's interesting. You're playing all the different military, some of the military leaders that were involved in the actual plots in World War II. And that I find very, very interesting. So that also comes with a bunch of dice, too. So there's a little bit of, like, well, I have all I need to do this plot, but if my dice roll doesn't work out, we're in trouble. And the game, you know, if you can't do it, the game just, it will end.
Yeah. And isn't there, like, a card in the game that says, like, if you win, they want you to, like, take a picture that says, I killed Hitler or something like that?
I think so, but I ignored that kind of weirdness. But
so, yeah. Good pick.
Okay.
That's another one, like, I don't think a lot of people know about. I have it. I learned it at some point, and I never got it to the table. But I know I think I played a partial solo game of it. But yeah, that was a good pick.
And all the characters have, like, the real bio of them on the back of their character sheet. And I just found it interesting.
Yeah, super, super interesting. So the game, and that was Black Orchestra.
Yes.
The game that I was thinking about when we were talking about, like, you know, how sometimes a theme can kind of turn you off.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while to play Arkham Horror, the LCG. That is the next game on my list. And, you know, I started playing Lord of the Rings LCG, Living Card Game, before, and I really, really liked that. And I was just like, eh, there's no way I'm going to like this Arkham Horror LCG game. But eventually, I got that revised core set that came out in 2021. And Arkham Horror LCG originally came out in 2016 from Fantasy Flight Games. The designers are Nate French and MJ Newman, who also both worked on Lord of the Rings, the card game, which easily could have been on my list. But at this point, I've just played more Arkham Horror, and I really, really like it. So I've kind of talked about this at some point in the podcast a little bit too. But it's a cooperative game where you and your teammates or other players are investigators, and you play these different campaigns that have different scenarios. And I think one of the things that's really neat about it, besides the fact that you have your own investigator that has their own deck of cards, and you can kind of like level up as you play through the campaign, through each campaign, but the way that the game kind of just sucks you into the mystery and the story with just cards. Like, there's no game board, but every time you're doing a scenario, you'll set up these like location cards, and they'll be face down, and you have to kind of like move your investigator to a location. Then you can reveal what it does, or if there's an effect or anything. And sometimes that unlocks other locations that you'll kind of build out this map of cards of different locations. And the way they use cards to kind of make each campaign of the game have just kind of a different storyline and feel is really, really impressive to me. And I haven't even played, so I've played the main core set scenario twice. And then I'm in the middle of the Edge of the Earth campaign still, which I think is the last time I talked about this, which is the second to newest campaign. There's a newer one that came out earlier this year, or late last year, called, I think, the Scarlet Key, the Scarlet Key, I think. But like, I'm so excited to play all these other campaigns, which I've been picking up since they've been releasing the revised core set version of them, or not core set, but like the revised version of these campaigns. And I just think it's such a great game. It's very, very challenging. Again, you have like the different investigators are interesting. They have different strengths and weaknesses, and the way you can kind of like figure out with whoever you're going to be playing with, like, you know, make sure you pick different strengths. And it's just, again, that like that what I love about cooperative games is like you're working together, and you like really have to work together, and it's challenging. It's challenging. And again, like with this one, I'm just impressed with how they just use cards to like create this crazy story. And like, even, you know, like I don't want to spoil anything, but like there are so many different things they do in terms of what you're doing location wise and what you're seeing and experiencing in the game with just cards. Cool. And I also like they have this like chaos bag where you'll do skill tests. So instead of like rolling a die, you have a chaos bag with these tokens, and you'll draw one out when you're doing a test. And you can put different as different campaigns go on, you put these different tokens in there. So that is my number two, if they were ranked, Arkham Horror LCG.
All right, cool. I've played some of those, but I do the core box and I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to get into that card crazy collecting business. So yeah. I am happy with the core, box.
Yeah, yeah. I feel you. And yeah, this theme, like, you know, you're talking about Arkham Horror, that game that kind of was your first cooperative board game.
Yeah.
I did not think I was going to be into it, but like somehow the way they make this story unravel just like, oh, it captivates me. And I'm just like, I want to play more. I want to now play other scenario or campaigns so I can see what they do.
Right.
But yeah, it's just, it's awesome in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is the last game on your list?
I have Kazuka.
Huh?
K-U-Z-O-O-K-A.
Kazuka.
Yeah.
Cool.
That is 2022, actually. It's new.
Oh.
Pegasus Spiel. It's 2 to 6 players. And it is a no-talking game. It actually has a board, and you have a hand of cards, and you are all animals trying to escape a zoo. The zoo is not cool. You don't like it. And you just found out that you're going to be moved to another zoo that's in even worse condition. So you are all animals trying to escape the zoo. The problem is that you all speak different languages, so there's no talking. You know, right?
Yeah.
The zebras can't talk to the monkeys.
Right.
So you are all working together on a board. And playing cards to try to kind of, you're betting almost, like, how far can we get down this escape path before we kind of bust? So there are numbers on the path that you are trying to get to when you add up all of your cards together in their different suits. There's a yellow suit, a blue suit, red suit, and a green suit. So you don't want to go over that number that's on the path. So you don't want to move too far down the path and then find out that people didn't have the right cards to get to that number or went too far over that number. And every round of the game, you start at square one. So you get the new cards and you start the hole trying to break out again. And it's interesting, and there's no talking. So it's another implementation of that the mind feel, where you're kind of trying to understand what the other person's trying to do, and where you place on the path is kind of telling people what you've got in your hand. So it's got that interesting feel to it.
Ooh, I love this theme so much.
Yeah.
That's really clever and unique. I want to try this one now.
Yeah, so that's Kazuka by Pegasus Spiel.
Nice.
Yeah, it's neat.
So my number one game is Spirit Island.
Ooh.
Yeah, so Spirit Island is a game that came out in 2017. It's designed by R. Eric Roos. And it's published by Greater Than Games. Now, this is a heavier game, very thematic for 1 to 4 players, where you play as different spirits and you're defending your home island from colonizing invaders. So you work together, like everybody plays their own unique spirit, and there are like a whole bunch of cool spirits, and they have great artwork and, you know, different play styles and everything. And you're kind of like working with the local natives, the Dahan, to scare away these invaders and, you know, get them off your island. The board is kind of a modular setup where you'll put out these different pieces of island boards together, depending on the player count. And each board itself has like maybe 5 or 6 different spaces. I forget exactly how many, but there are different types of terrain. And like sand and mountains and water. And you start with some presents on the board, which are these wooden discs of your color. And you'll also start with a few power cards. So in this game, you have power cards and you can gain more throughout the game. And the power cards have different effects that are going to help you try to like scare these invaders away and push them off or get rid of them. Completely. And the power cards have either like a fast effect or a slow effect. And when you play a card that has a fast effect, you're going to get to do whatever the effect is before the invaders kind of like take their turn and do bad stuff and keep, you know, spawning on your island.
Right.
And, but the cards that have a slow effect would happen after that. So the other thing with your cards is they each have like some icons, like symbols in the left, the top left area of them. So when you play cards, if you have a, they're elements. When you have a certain combination of elements, you'll be able to trigger innate abilities that your spirit has. So each spirit has like a, you know, a couple innate abilities that are special abilities. But again, you're going to trigger them by playing a certain combination of power cards that have the right elements that will trigger them. And then spirits also just have their own kind of special ability, which is cool. So there's like a really cool hand management element to this game. And you're also trying to position your presence on the board so that when you play cards, you know, you'll be able to get rid of the invaders. And the invaders on the board will either be like settlers, or once you don't do anything about it, then they become towns, meaning more people, and then they can become cities. So you're just trying to do stuff to get rid of those invaders, because if you don't, if you let something get out of control, they're going to like blight parts of the island. And I guess what I love about this game is, number one, it grew on me.
Okay.
So some of my favorite things in the world, like Bjork, like one of my favorite musicians, I didn't like when I first started listening to Bjork be like, oh, I love every song, you know. It was like over years, like just slowly appreciating what she does as an artist more and more, and to becoming to a point where I'm like, she's one of my favorite musicians. So with this game, I did not like love it initially. And it's partially because the friend of ours who introduced it to us, he like put it on a super complex mode, like difficulty level. And he was also just plays really fast. So like, I don't think I grasped, you know, we grasped what was going on. And I was like, oh, like, I think this is neat, you know? And then at some point I played it with our friends, Sam and Megan, and Sam's a really good teacher. So I'm like, oh, like now I'm getting it. And I liked it a little more. But then I played it with Amanda Panda and Jackie Fuchs. And we played this 3-player ladies only version. And we just had like our collaboration was top notch. And it was just like this such a satisfying game that we played together. And I went home that night and I was like, I get it now. Like, I get it. Like, I love this. This game is amazing. And like, so it took like those few plays before that were a little bit bumpy, and then to get to that 3-player game where I'm just like, I get it. Like, some people maybe got it from their first play of Spirit Island, but yeah, I just think it's such a great game. I love, number one, the art and all the different spirits are very interesting. The theme is great. Okay. We're scaring away colonizers. Like, you know, we're spirits on an island. Like, that's such an awesome theme.
Right.
And then, again, like, I love the way it feels collaborating on this one. Like, everyone, you sort of have your own chunk of the island to focus on. But, like, sometimes, so, you know, it kind of takes away that, like, quarterbacking. And you have your own power cards and everything. Mm-hmm. So everybody's kind of doing their thing. But it's like, every once in a while, I'll be like, hey, ooh, I can't take care of this situation. Nikki, are you able to do something? And then we're like, we're working together and it's exciting. And yeah, I just think it's such a great game. And I love heavy games. It's a little bit heavier and it feels really thematic. So
yeah,
that's why I love Spirit Island.
Yeah, I enjoyed that game too. I thought it was really cool. Another one of those where it's a game.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Not this epic thing.
Right. You can play it in one evening and
Right.
And I think it works great at all player counts as well. So yeah. And I like, as I was like making some notes on what I wanted to say about it, I just wanted to play it. Like, I really like this game a lot. So as I mentioned earlier, I Ghost Stories kind of inspired me to just want to mention a few games that are cooperative games that I have yet to play, but I've like kind of been wanting to play for a while. So I'm just going to quickly mention a couple of them. So one of them is Ghost Stories. Another is The Seventh Continent, which is like a choose your own adventure exploration game. And I don't know if a lot of people realize this or not, but it's the same designers as Just One.
Yeah,
it's the same two designers. And it's just one of those games that I want to just, you know, either play solo or with Matt and just like have a whole day to just kind of explore it and get into it. So that one, and then Frosthaven, I backed it on Kickstarter and I got my copy, but you know, I'm intimidated by how long it'll even take me to like punch it and organize it. And, but every time I've seen it at conventions, I'm like, this looks awesome. And like I said, I really, really liked Jaws of the Lion. So mm-hmm. I want to get into some deeper Gloomhaven world. And the last one is probably the game I've had the longest and have not played. It's Pandemic Iberia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is by Jesus Torres Castro and Matt Leacock. And I've had this game for a while because, like, at some point, I don't know if it was, like, Dice Tower or something, but somebody was like, hey, this is, like, such a great version of Pandemic. And then I would hear other mm-hmm. people say, this is such a great version of Pandemic. And it's, like, set in 1848, so there's a little history to it. You're traveling from, like, Barcelona to Lisboa, and the roles are like nurse, there's a railway man, a rural doctor, and a sailor, and you're trying to find cures to malaria, typhus, yellow fever, you know, and it just seems like a really like deeper thematic integration of Pandemic. And like I said, it's highly ranked on BGG also, but okay. I've had it for a while and I just haven't played it yet.
Yeah, so I haven't played it yet either.
Oh, maybe we need to play it together.
I know.
But yeah, so I just wanted to throw that in because I think it's cool, you know, fun to mention games that I've been wanting to play and just haven't gotten around to yet.
Mm-hmm. But have you tried Sleeping Gods?
I have not.
Okay, see, it can go on forever.
Yeah.
The list never stops.
I heard Sleeping Gods is awesome, and actually our friends Cassie and Jake got it for a wedding gift, and when they don't have a big enough table to play that kind of game, so when we were away at Asia, we let them play on my table. So they kind of camped out at our place multiple nights and just played through it, and they had a blast. They said they were.
I haven't really finished it.
Okay,
but we did play several, and it's. I want to finish it or start it again and get it finished.
And there's like a new version of it too, right?
Right, yeah. I think we just have to start the first.
Yeah. Maybe one day we'll get into that too. But yeah, I had another friend of mine who told me he played with his partner and they just, you know, again, like the whole weekend, they just spammed it, you know. Just like play back to back. They couldn't stop playing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, Nikki, it was awesome talking to you. And
okay.
I'm glad we were able to do this. And
definitely for sure.
Do it again sometime.
I'll do it again.
Yeah.
It was fun.
And now that I know you like tile laying games, that's... and you're an artist, so it'd be fun to talk about something art-related with you.
Okay,
but cool. But thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for asking me.
You've been listening to the Board Game Geek Podcast, produced and edited by Candace Harris. Special thanks to Matt Fonda for editing and mixing our music. Be sure to visit us on the web at BoardGameGeek.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitch under Board Game Geek. You can reach us by email at podcast@BoardGameGeek.com. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming!